Hi, I'm Doris Purchase, and welcome to Beyond the Frame, a podcast created just for you by Propeller Art Gallery, artists empowering artists in Toronto. Together, we'll take a deep dive into the hearts and minds of working visual artists today and their practice. In each episode, you will hear illuminating and intimate explorations of all things art, and you'll hear it in the artist's own voice. We'll talk process, inspiration, challenges, and much more. Everything you've ever wanted to know about art making or about the artists themselves happens right here. So let's sit back and have a listen, shall we? Today we welcome Tracy Thompson. Which ism is it? Under which ism would you classify your work?
Well, my work seems to fall within three isms. First is Expressionism, because Expressionism was my first major art influence. Then Symbolism, because I use symbology in pretty much every piece I make, whether intentional or not. Symbolic images always just seem to float up. And last but not least, Biomorphism, because nature is hugely important to me and informs everything I do. And as well as symbols, organic forms always float into my paintings and quite often are set within an imagined landscape format.
Who's your muse? Influencers, educators, mentors, who has greatly inspired you?
Okay, this is a long list. I have a lot of people who've inspired me, so please bear with me. I promise you the rest of my answers are shorter. My first major, and I would say most impactful art influence, is Tom Thompson. He's my great-great-uncle, and he's the absolute reason I do what I do, and he's also the reason I don't do what I don't do, which is landscape painting. That belongs to him, not me. His incredible abstract expressionist sketches hung on our walls at home when I was little, and I'd take one down, go sit in the window seat with the sun blaring in, prop it up on my knees, and just gaze at it. This tiny glowing jewel. I'd look at every single mark he made and run my fingers over it, too. It takes all my might, even today, not to touch them in the gallery. And even when I'm being good, the gallery monitors still catch me and they motion me to step back. But, you know, I guess I felt such a special connection to him and his art. I felt like I had his permission, that he would expect me to touch them and wouldn't be mad at me. So there it is. My first exposure to Expressionism happened to be my iconic family member, who set the bar pretty darn high. No pressure. Also, there was Tom's brother, my great-grandfather George Thompson. His impressionist paintings were all around me growing up as well. My mom and dad instilled in me a reverence for nature and that art could be a respected vocation and not just a hobby. Never did they say to me, you'd better have something else to fall back on. They always supported me. Galleries, art exhibits, the original McMichael Gallery in Kleinberg, even the buildings and grounds inspired me. The entire group of seven inspired me. I remember sitting on the floor of the great room with the fire roaring in the huge stone fireplace, listening to A.Y. Jackson speak. I was pretty young, and I remember being glued to the spot, but I can't remember a single word he said. What I do remember vividly, though, is every visual detail in that room. The plaid blanket on his lap, the rocking chair he sat on, his big painter's hands gesturing, and the wistful look on his face as he spoke. Later on, I met Casson in Edward's bookshop on Queen. I really miss that bookstore. Anyway, I was in a long lineup with a bunch of people waiting to get their art book signed by him. Then, when it came to my turn, I introduced myself, and he bent down toward me and whispered a little secret to me about my great-great-uncle. It was a very special moment, and it is still a secret. Fast forward a few years, my life changed dramatically when I walked through the doors of OCA before the D. I immediately felt right at home and a real sense of belonging. I did my 2 years in fine arts, and in my fourth year made the dramatic switch over to experimental arts. All my teachers at OCA from both disciplines, some of whom have since passed, were incredible artists whose work inspired me in different ways, from the figurative fundamentals to the extremes of abstraction. In fine arts drawing, John Newman tops that list for so many reasons, and he still inspires me to this day. Tom LaPierre, Peter Ma, John Gould, and for figurative painting, Abba Bayefsky, who is an expressionist and a war artist, taught me to use every space, whether empty or full, to make it count and edit out anything superfluous. He also said, "Clearly you really love to paint." He was always so encouraging to me. He also introduced me to sushi, which I thought at the time was pretty gross, but I didn't let him know that. During this period, I was totally infatuated by the European figurative expressionists like Egon Schiele, Otto Dix, Baslitz, Max Beckmann, and Soutine, for example. In experimental arts, I abandoned the figure altogether, worked large abstract canvases under the tutelage of such respected artists as Gord Rayner, Graham Cawftree, Gus Weissman. My art heroes expanded even further to Diebenkorn, Joseph Beuys, de Kooning, Clay, and Painters 11. On top of all that, there was Queen Street West. It was an explosion of creativity at that time. The Music Gallery with Nobby Kubota, the Rivoli, Queen Mother, and I had shows at both. The Cameron, where artists gathered and lived. Chroma Living was a huge art extravaganza with the Chromazone visual artists, musicians, fashion shows. It was unlike anything we had seen here before and rivaled what was happening in the major centers internationally. I loved avant-garde everything in all the arts, from the Sankaijuku dance troupe to Brian Eno sitting behind a potted plant performing with Jan Hassel on the OCA stage. Wow. All mind-blowing stuff, and all of it continues to inform my work to this day. Okay, I'm almost done. Contemporary painters, Peter Doig, Claire Grill, Sylvie Ringer, Kim Dorland, Adam Lee, Italian artist Mimmo Palladino, and Francesco Clemente, and of course, all of the propeller artists throughout the years. Believe it or not, this is an abbreviated list. My muse, however, is short and sweet. It's life. Just life.
Materials matter. What are your chosen favorite tools and preferred medium?
Well, I'm first and foremost an oil painter, a watercolorist. I love my drawing. So standard tools, oils, acrylics, canvas or paper, watercolors, graphite, oil sticks, brushes, of course, standard stuff, you know, my fingers, palette knife, any and all texturing devices. Lately, though, I'm fairly obsessed with my reconstructions, which will be featured in my show at Propeller November 3rd for 3 weeks. Yes, that's a plug. And the materials are my hand-painted papers, oil paint, acrylics, and a multitude of fun extras like glue, rope, Swarovski crystals, magazine bits, like anything and everything but the kitchen sink, although that might be cool too.
Slump secrets. What methods do you employ to get yourself out of a slump?
Well, any slump I've ever experienced has been due to time and space restrictions. So I consider myself truly fortunate this past year. I've had a functional space to work in and uninterrupted time to do so. And because of this, it was the opposite of a slump. So I guess my secret is guard your time like a soldier. Make sure you have a space of your own away from the laundry. But wherever you carve your space, no matter how small, it will become your sacred place.
In the beginning. So tell me a bit about your process. Do you have a bag of tricks, lucky talismans, or habits? Where do you start? And more importantly, when do you stop?
Oh, my color is all over the map. So I start by deciding my color palette, warm earth tones, black or conversely white paintings, calm, cool neutrals, or my sort of neon, every wild color in the book palette. Then I get my painted papers ready for color, cutting, and pasting. Next, I'll choose the music I think I want to hear. Then the fun begins by randomly and furiously working forwards by laying in some color on the canvas. I scrape and drag the paint around until some forms appear, and then I have a sense of where this painting's going. Once the color fills the canvas, this generally dictates the mood of the piece because symbols appear at this point. I have a clear idea of my musical choice, and I'll put that on. By this time, my painted papers are dry, and I begin the deconstruction process by cutting my painted papers, magazine images, printed art, etc. Now, the real fun begins, the reconstruction process. I guess my trick is, at this point, I work backwards from the negative space and shape the papers around the image, the positive space. A habit I have is, at the end of each day, photographing the piece, coming home, and looking to see what stands out as a thing that's got to go or a thing that needs to be retained. This reconstruction part is laborious, in the sense of like having to cut and fit these shapes together like a puzzle. You have to be exacting. So it can be a challenge, but it's also very meditative, and it's super fun. I need to feel somehow moved to know it's done, so I stop when the piece moves me. Even then, I remember Abba Bayefsky's words, and I scour the entire piece top to bottom and determine that nothing else needs editing out and that every image and form serves a purpose. Then I fully stop.
Calling all emo. What do you wish people to think or feel when they contemplate your work?
Well, let's face facts. We artists do what we want to see or feel. At least I do anyway. This act of art making for me is, I like to say, purely self-indulgent, but I've been corrected before by a friend who said, no, it's actually purely selfish. So this is, you know, where all my life stuff ends up. So at the end of the day, I do really wish for people to look longer than a second. I also wish, if I'm being honest with myself, to move people on some level, any level, really, to question, quell a fear or incite fear, to calm or agitate or even have a laugh. I mean, whatever they feel or think, even if it's nothing, that's still something.
The struggle is real. Talk to me about your biggest challenges as an artist. What methods do you use to overcome these challenges?
Well, this past year was a horror show all over the world. COVID, natural disasters, floods, fires, so many people just trying to survive. So for me to talk about my struggles today is small potatoes in comparison. If I'm to talk about my struggles as an artist in the past, well, that's different. I did have a tough time even calling myself an artist because I felt like a bit of a fraud. My biggest challenge has been trusting my instincts and following my own path. People have sometimes pressured me to do landscapes and to cash in on my famous relative, which to me always felt opportunistic and untruthful. And sometimes they wanted to see a certain type of work from me, and I do it occasionally, succumbing to the pressure. And the strange thing is that it would sell. So it took me a really long time to throw caution to the wind and refuse to cater to people's expectations of my work, even if it meant that it wasn't going to sell. Although nice, that's never been my end goal. Remember that bar that was set so high by my predecessors? Well, I hurt myself more than a few times trying to reach it till I finally realized I needed to set my own bar and just find my own voice. They may be small potatoes, but at least now I can say they're mine.
Picture perfect. In your opinion, what constitutes a perfect piece of art? And what qualities in your own work would you signify as a perfect work? For example, perfect composition, confident brushstrokes, illustrating a concept, or something else altogether?
Well, I'll try to answer this question with a story. One day in experimental arts, I was almost finished a large abstract painting when I noticed Gus Weissman sort of hovering behind me. I turned to him and he said, "That's almost a perfect painting." Keyword, almost. So I didn't miss a beat and I was so excited and said, "Whoa, wow, thanks so much. What would make it perfect?" And he kind of rolled his eyes and shrugged and said, "Well, if I knew that, then I would paint it." So after that, I continued on with that painting, and I remember being really, really overconfident and then totally blowing it in my quest for that elusive perfection. So how I really feel is that personally, I prefer some clumsiness because for me, it shows an emotional gut reaction and it allows the work to feel alive. Otherwise, you know, you can overwork it and then it just ends up, you know, you end up killing it practically. So I guess the moral of the story is this. We're all in search of that perfect ultimate artwork, but what that is or what that looks like, we can't define in words. But we sure do feel it when we see it.
Art Speak, how do you feel about titling, discussing, and explaining your work?
I'm not a fan. I think I'm personally allergic to discussing my work in public. I get huge stage fright, and my mind literally shuts down. I mean, I much prefer to write my thoughts in private without all eyes on me. Also, though, I think it demystifies art and underestimates the viewer's perceptive abilities. I mean, why spell it out? Isn't art supposed to be an altered escape from reality and a temporary walk into the unfamiliar? And besides that, visual art is its own language. You know, we don't have to add to it. It's enough. We don't need pictures and novels to understand the content. We conjure up our own visuals, the written word. Titling, however, I love. I often use song lyrics like the title of my show, In My Room, the Beach Boys song. I do thematic series titles, sometimes phrases or book titles. There's a great quote from George Brock. He said, "In art, the only one thing that counts is the thing you can't explain."
Heavy metal or classical? What do you listen to while you work? Or is silence your thing?
Anything and everything. My musical tastes were initially inspired or ordered by my older brother, as in, don't listen to that, like the Monkees. Listen to this. And this was, you know, all the British glam rock, Kate Bush, David Bowie, Roxy Music, Eno. And I still listen to all that and much more. And my husband's a musician, and he's inspired other musical genres like Tom Waits, Johnny Cash. You know, I can put on my favorite Canadians, Molly Johnson, Broken Social Scene, Daniel Lanois, and then go to something ambient or dissonant like Schoenberg or repetitive rhythms of Steve Reich, then move into some Patti Smith and Sound Collective. Maybe have a dance break with Lil Nas or Black Eyed Peas, and then sometimes when the music's too intrusive, silence is my thing.
Why for art, though? Why do you make art?
Art has been in my life since forever, and it's been my lifeline. The one true thing I can always count on. It's the only place where I can lose all sense of time and gravity. When that elusive, transcendent state takes over, it's like nirvana. It really is. So now, if you can bear with me, I'd like to say one last thing. Art at its core is about human connection. This podcast experience has brought me together not only with the artists I interviewed, who I thank profusely for allowing me to enter into their private creative world, but also with the Propeller artists who formed the Beyond the Frame team. Thank yous go to our host, Doris Purchase, for her charismatically cool voice, leading us in so beautifully and out so seamlessly, as well as lending us her compelling artwork that graces the BTF cover. I truly appreciated her constant support and generous offering of ideas and solutions, and for always being the most delightful and wonderful friend to me. To the marketing team, a big thanks to Lisa Johnson, who along with Doris first heard my fledgling idea to create a podcast and then supported and presented it to the board. Thank you to Phil Nguyen for his terrific animation and graphic design of our podcast cover. A special thank you to Parnair, who happily and without complaint uploaded our podcast weekly on social media without fail. And to Ruth Maud for any and all things tech. I'm truly appreciative. A very loud shout out to the Orange Lounge Recording Studio and our engineers, Spencer Sunshine and Anthony Yordanov, for making us all sound so great. Last but not least, thank you to Propeller Art Gallery and Michelle Letard for giving me the green light. And to you, our podcast audience, thank you for listening.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Beyond the Frame, a PAG podcast. To hear more episodes and to view the artist's works, please visit www.propellerartgallery.ca. Hosted by Doris Purchase, produced by Tracy Thompson, and recorded at the Orange Lounge Studio in Toronto. Also, the Propeller Art Gallery recognizes the presence of the Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabe, Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Huron-Wendat Nations. We acknowledge we are hosted on land governed by Treaty 13, the Toronto Purchase, the Two Row Wampum Treaty, and the Dish with One Spoon Treaty. We are committed to peaceably sharing and caring for the resources around the Great Lakes and operating the gallery on the principles of inclusiveness as we continue to exhibit art created by artists from all over the world. Thank you for listening.